It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Alongside ESPN's John Anderson, here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
Of your day, the John Anderson Homer Hour, formerly 7-2.5. That's what he high jumped in his career. But I don't think that's the most impressive thing anymore. Joining me now, Professor John Anderson from Missouri, who had lunch with Maria Sharapova. That might trump 7-2.5. I have not gone to my Wikipedia experts I should probably go AI and say, what is more impressive? High jumping? Can you put that in, Pebble? I'm still trying to figure out which AI is the best. Which is more impressive, lunch with Maria Sharapova or high jumping 7-2.5? This is why we need AI. Which, sir, are you most proud of?
It's a charmed life, isn't it?
I don't know. Yeah.
It is.
If I would emphasize, as you stated, and I will let you finish, I don't know that people realize that maybe it's different for you, but you spend time with athletes or people, and it's just a job. They don't really treat you as a person, and that doesn't mean in a negative way, but they're there. And then every so often, you feel like you've met or been introduced to the person as a person. Yeah. You don't ever know what it's going to be. You clearly felt that way with her, and that feels special. Because for me, it happened so seldom, and I can almost remember the times where I went, wow, they're actually curious about me. Right. And it seems real. Go ahead.
Right. Like, I had that happen. This sounds like such a name drop and thing, but I was visiting with Tiger Woods one time. And the one time I went to the British Open, and he and Scott Van Pelt are close, and he and his Scott and Tiger's caddy were even more close, Joey LaCava. And so we were all just visiting, kind of walking down a fairway. And we got to talking about kids. And I said, my daughter, she's getting into it. She's only like 4, but she didn't mind going to the golf course and swinging his club. And he goes, my daughter hates golf. I'm like, really? And he goes, yeah. He goes, because every time she sees my golf club, she equates that with daddy's leaving. He's going out to a tournament. And I thought, wow, like, that's an actual human thing, right?
Yes.
Here's your daughter, and she sees her golf clubs, and you think, oh, my dad's. And she sees those and goes, oh, I guess dad's leaving again, you know? And this was after all the stuff and the scandal, whatever, and he'd been divorced by that time. But I thought, wow, that's a really, you're like, wow, that's like any other dad who's going on a business trip.
Yeah, he let you enter his life.
Yeah, and that's, but you're like, that's just, that could be like the dad who sells power tools for Stanley, and he had to go to wherever, you know?
Yes.
And that's how she saw her dad. He just had a business trip. And, you know, so many other people think, God, it's amazing. And yeah, so he said, my daughter, and apparently she's grown out of it. She doesn't mind caddying for him at these tournaments and stuff now. But yeah, in that moment when she wasn't, you know, because she's just old enough to go to Stanford now, isn't she? So she's, you know, she was 4 or 5 at the time at most. But yeah, I thought that was kind of a, like you said, kind of this human moment, that all that was a person. It was not world's best golfer. So yeah, those things happen. And Maria Sharapova was, she just couldn't have been nicer the entire time. And I don't think, because by the time we got done, we had spent, I don't know, 4.5-5 hours together. The things take forever to shoot. And you know, she just, you know, if she was acting, she never broke character.
Yeah,
that whole
and
time.
Then you're just being nice to everybody because you've been around enough. You know when it's not real. I mean, it's not. This wasn't like your only rodeo. So I'm sure.
And I apologize, man. I'm so sorry. I got to leave you. I kind of told these guys this is what was going to happen. She's like, no, go ahead. It'll be fine. And I was back. I was back in 15 minutes. But She was great. So there you go.
That is very good. So we'll have to have it as the Discount Legal Twitter poll question. But we won't mention John Anderson because he gets offended. Don't have John Anderson.
I do not have his name.
Which is more impressive? Lunch with Maria Sharapova in what year? That's probably a key, too. Because, I mean, I don't think it would be as impressive now, but.
Well, you got to go back some because the punchline, right, was Stuart Scott. I was saving the
2010? Can we say that? Something like that?
Probably, maybe even a little sooner. Because
all right, we'll go 2005.
No, longer than that. I'll tell you what, because we were closing on this house.
That's right.
I lived in that house 18 years, so it had to be closer to 2007.
Yeah, all right, 2007. Having lunch with Maria Sharapova and having lunch alone, right?
So it was a great commercial. We're sitting there, eating, and I'm kind of protecting this spot that's going to be Stuart. He's going to sit there, and Stan Verrett comes by, and I'm like, dude, you can, no, I'm saving for Stuart. If somebody else comes by, I'm like, I'm saving for Stuart. And then she comes by, and I'm like, by all means, sit down. Enjoy. Yes, absolutely. It's all yours. So then we sat there, and, we ran that for God knows how
many times. And I loved your other comment, because I can mention a couple of people that I won't mention their names. Like, you think someone's pretty. And then you see him in person, and you go, this is impossible. Yeah, they even look better in person.
Yeah, she was lovely.
I can mention this name. I met at the Super Bowl Brooklyn Decker, who is married to
Andy Roddick.
Okay, and I guess he's my nephew, I thought played against Roddick when they were both juniors. He was very good. They were at the Nationals, and I left her a note saying, hey, tell Andy that Kyle True still remembers playing him back in Kalamazoo and whatever. And I look at him going, you can't be. How could you look better in person than how you? But anyway, so.
I did one with Andy Roddick. I did a commercial with Andy. He was a big Star Wars geek. So he came in to do all the Star Wars stuff. And then
he's very good on TV as an analyst. I'm impressed with
him. He really, I don't know if you follow commentary like this. Did you see, I think it was Sally Jenkins just ripped the McEnroes in the Washington Post during Wimbledon. And she was very complimentary of Agassi, complimentary of Andy Roddick and some of these other people. And she had had it with the McEnroes.
She's just wrong. Patrick is by far the best. John is just John, and it really depends on who he's working with to where they get the best out of him. But she didn't know anything about tennis, and maybe she doesn't want to learn anything about tennis. But they're both very good.
To have you read it. I thought she made some
the worst. The worst, as an analyst, is Chris Evert. Everything about Chris Evert and others is always mental. Because she never played anybody better than she was. She doesn't know what it's like to say, well, this person's better. I'm in trouble. I don't have an answer to that. Everything is mental. And, I mean, she's one of the greatest ever, and she's pretty good. But that's how she views every match because that's how she viewed it. And one match, Mary Jo Fernandez, who you'd have to know tennis, they thought she was going to be the next Chris Evert. She was very, very good. Very. She never was. But she said once, well, Chris – You don't know what it's like to not be better than the person you're playing. So, anyway, I don't even know why I added that. I guess I just thought I wanted to sneak that in. All right, because we had Jason Wilde at 5:15. I thought before then we could just tell stories. I wondered if you had a Ryan Sandberg story at all. Who passed away?
No, I don't. Because, I despise the Cubs.
Even him? Did you really despise him?
Well, I didn't like any of the Cubs, but right. I spent a lot of times yesterday texting friends of mine who I know that are Cubs fans, and a lot of them, were WGN Cub fans, right?
Yes.
That's how they learned they were on every day. So they're the WGN. And I did say, like, hey, I'm sorry, really probably my best friend in the business news-wise, who had posters of him everywhere. And I said, sorry to hear this. Like, I just – like, that guy was Cubs royalty, right? So for all the Cubs fans, even though I don't like their team, I get who he was in their sphere, right? He's royalty for them.
And incredibly nice royalty to where if you hated him because you hated Cubs, that's fine. But you would never have hated him if you would have ever met him.
No, you hated him because he beat you all the time.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's good. He played on some raunchy teams and he played on some good ones. During that area, but he just, he found a way to just, and he, every day, like he was good every day.
Yep.
And then he was good every day for a dozen years. Which
I always
is
thought
hard
he was their Robin Young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think that's far off.
Now I have a question for you. I remember Ryan Sandberg because it's the only time I violated the locker room rule. I was working in Appleton, and a friend of mine, Mike Diamond, I think he believed that Ryan Sandberg was God. I think he thought this was the return of Jesus right here.
Uh-huh.
And so he said, could you get him to sign anything? And mm-hmm. so now we're in the locker room, and it's after, I don't remember who they played, and there were people on. I said, I know this is a violation, but I have somebody who just adores you. Would you sign anything? And he looked in his locker and said, I don't have anything. Hold on. Let me go get something. He went and got one of his baseball cards and signed it. And I'll never forget it. I thought his kindness was off the charts. Now, granted, it was like 83, but the rules were still the same. You never asked. And I don't know mm-hmm. if you ever, I would doubt that you ever violated that rule.
I violated it once. And it was the very first big league game I covered. So when I was a kid, my dad always took me for my birthday. We'd go and we would go to a Brewer game. We'd go to a Friday night game or Saturday night game and then a day game on Saturday or Sunday, right? That was always it. And we did that 10 years, and it's still one of my fondest memories of childhood. And so one day I got my glove and I've got my, you know, my ball in there, and we stayed at the Pfister. So it was a big, big time, right? And I get into the elevator, and there's Sparky Anderson. Okay. So he has just started his run with the Tigers. And so I ask him, and he signs the ball for me. Okay. So I'm 10. I don't know. Not very old. 9. And signs the ball for me. And so I had, you know, with that ball was around all the time. So now I cover my first game. It's against the Royals, and they're playing the Tigers. And so I take the baseball in, and I told him, I said, years ago when I was a kid, when I was 8 or 9, you signed this baseball for me. And today is the first big league game I'm doing. I still haven't graduated, but I was working at the NBC station KOMU. And I said, I would love for you to sign this again so I can put it away. And so I have a baseball signed by Sparky Anderson
twice.
On two different sides. Yeah. Once from when I was a kid and the first big league. And it's the only time I've ever done it. And it only because it was, you know, there's Sparky Anderson.
So and I will bet, as I have, you have observed other people violate that rule.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's strange is, right, you meet most of those people you meet in other situations, and you can do that. You don't have to, yeah. Right? You were just, what was it, a week or two ago when you were over at the golf tournament, right? Like those people, like there's time to do that in different spots. You know, there's there's a right place and a right spot to do that. Although I worked in, Hannah Storm had a celebrity waiter thing one time, and I went down to help with that, and Chris Everett was there. So think about it. I'm 60, and she's what, 71, 72?
She's right about 70. She's about almost exactly my age.
Yeah, so figure when you're 12 years old, and Chris Everett might be the most beautiful woman in the world. So the first time I met her, it was like I had trouble remembering my name. Right? Like that was harder than meeting Maria Sharapova, because Maria Sharapova was, you know, like you're older than her, you've covered enough of it, it doesn't matter. But
I did not interview her, but I was at an event and she was in that group. I mean, mm-hmm. I always thought she was attractive on TV, and then I saw her in real life. How could TV make you not as attractive as you are? That was my theory. It makes you thinner or taller. But yes, she.
And then in her greatness, nobody had a better line ever than Dick Enberg. Do you remember that?
No, I do not.
Because she dated Jimmy Connors and all these other people, right? And he said one time, the line is long, but it moves fast.
That is good. I've got copies Dick of Enberg. His book. I've got to check in his book if he has that in the book. I'll bet not. Yeah. I don't think that's in his book. Do you think that's in his book?
I don't know, but they were talking about her suitors and blah, blah, blah. He goes, yeah, well, the line is long, but it moves fast.
Pam Shriver, at one point, who competed against her, said, they call her the Ice Queen, she said, on the court. Just didn't say any more. Jason Wilde and John Anderson.
Yes.
Next.
This is the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app. It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
And I am a great listener. The cot is set, and I get to listen and enjoy John Anderson, 7'2½", and Jason Wilde. Take it away, Professor.
So, Wilde, this was crazy. I got my season ticket packet that the Packers send out. You know, there's no calendar this year, but that's okay. I've got a phone that tells me what date it is. I'm at the bottom. It was signed by Ed Policy. And I'm like, wow, that officially, that's changed. Mark Murphy's gone. He's done. He's out. He's a ghost. He's a vapor.
Those are all true statements. Yeah, the era is over, and now Ed's the man. I'd be curious. This is one of the many things. Because we did this thing with Ed a little over a month ago. It was after the mini camp ended. And we went up to the alumni suite, and we did on-the-record interviews. And then after that, we all hung out together. And some people drank beer. I had a cookie, because that's my vice. And we talked for a while. And I did say, because I am a longtime admirer, and I would call him now a friend, of Bob Harlan. And we did... Ed and I had a spirited but friendly debate about raising ticket prices every single year. He said there's also something in the NFL's, I don't know if they're bylaws or what, but there's basically a tool that other owners can use if they feel like other teams are not selling their tickets for as much as they could. So, like, the wealthy billionaire jerks, according to Ed, could get involved if they kept their ticket prices too low. And I said, well, I'm not saying they have to be low. I'm just saying, you know, maybe not raising the prices every single year. Maybe that might be a way to go. And so I don't know if they'll raise ticket prices again for 2026, but it'll be interesting to see.
Yes, they will.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably will. That's right. What they do. Bye. Have a good practice. I love you. So I don't like when I look at one of the things that Ed has to do. I'm not sure why her seatbelt is still beeping, considering she's no longer in the car.
I just thought maybe you're driving a forklift talking to us.
Yeah, I am. I'm backing up. I do want to see how he handles this though, because I think Ed understands, I really do, that he's in a spot right now where they are starting to price out the people like the Andersons, right? Like, I really do. I think that he understands that. And what he's going to do about it, I'm not sure, because the prices are just going to keep going up.
On the actual field where they're trying to win a Super Bowl, What am I reading into the Nate Hobbs timeout and the Marshawn Lynch injury?
First, the Nate Hobbs thing I think is really interesting. I don't remember ever having a situation like this. I actually then had something today that happened that I don't remember seeing previously either. So let's start with Hobbs. To be honest, I don't understand. Maybe the way things are run with the Raiders, that renegade franchise that they are, it's just a free-for-all, no matter if they're in Oakland, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Oxnard, wherever. But they, like, I just don't know how you can be a professional and hit guys as much as he hit guys. Like, you know, was it your old colleague, was it Larry Beal that would say, announce his presence with authority. Was that him?
I think that might have been. That might have been Larry, yeah.
I struggle with – I'm getting old now, so I don't remember all the taglines. But I don't know if that was Nate Hobbs' way of kind of letting everybody know, hi, I'm here. But it was over the line, and the thing that happened with Lloyd was problematic. Like, I don't know how else you could see it. And now both Goody and Matt LaFleur said that when they watched the injury back on video, that they thought it looked to them like he pulled up and he did not – it's a groin injury for Marshawn Lloyd. And to them, it looked like he felt it even before he got hit. He never put his leg back down. Now, again, could they also be trying to protect the guy that hit him and caused the injury? Sure. Definitely a possibility. But either way, it was an unnecessary, unprofessional shot. Here's why I think it's interesting. So I spent time talking to Hobbs, and I was joking about this earlier today. Like, it was the first time I've ever actually talked to him. Like, I've been in groups, but it was the first time I talked to him one-on-one. And it was kind of, you know, it's a little awkward to have that be the topic. Hey, great to meet you. You're really kind of a jerk, man. But I loved what he said, which was basically, look, what I did was I feel horrible. I was wrong. I was absolutely wrong, and I feel terrible. It's a bad thing. And then he said, but on September 7th, it's going to be a real good thing. And he's right, right? Like, you can't do it to your teammates, but if you want to do it to the Detroit Lions to beat the band, go right ahead. That's what they're looking for. So Goody said something today that I think is really important, and that is that they are trying to be a specific type of team that they believe can go deep into the playoffs. And that team entails being physical. And they got him to be one of those guys who's going to be physical. So, you know, again, I don't think Marshawn Lloyd, who has had the worst luck of any player at the start of their career that I have ever seen, like even Mike Flanagan, who was playing in a preseason game and he had almost like a Tim Crumry type broken leg moment. You know, and it took him a while to get back. It was at least just one injury. Like, Marshawn Lloyd is like Slim Goodbody, but the opposite. Like, everything doesn't work on him. And now it's a groin injury. And, you know, he was finally going to play again last season, and he has emergency appendectomy. Like, this kid cannot catch a break to save his life. So that sucks. The other thing that I saw today, though, that I had never seen before, you know, I've seen Matt LaFleur get mad. I've heard Matt LaFleur swear. He's even sworn at me once or twice. But he got really upset with Rashid Walker, who he was engaged with J.J. Enagbare. It went a little too far. And then when Enagbare let up, Rashid basically put him in the ground. And LaFleur got mad and told him to go run a lap, which I'm sure happened to John Anderson at Southwest High School or whatever it might have been. But what was cool, like, that's great, right? Accountability, whatever you want to say. But what was cool about it to me is Josh Jacobs and Tucker Kraft and the entire starting offensive line went and ran with him. So he didn't run by himself. And I asked Josh Jacobs, what'd you do that for? And he looked at me like, Jason, why are you even asking that? And he said, because it's all for one and one for all, man. Like, I didn't just want him running by himself. We're all together in this. And, you know, Zach Thomas said the same thing. And so, you know, out of something that got the coach really ticked off, there was a moment of togetherness and connectivity on this team. And as you guys both know, I love stuff like that. I think it's so important to have that kind of chemistry and connectivity. And so, you know, is that going to win them the game on September 7th? No, but I thought it was a really kind of a seminal moment for this team that they did what they did. Because that the easy thing to do is say, yeah, sucks for Rashid. It's like 100 degrees out here. And the fact that they all ran with him, I thought was really neat.
And it tells you there's no battle at left tackle. That's over. Never existed. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, now, in fairness, you know, I don't, because of the show in the morning, you know, I don't get to see all of the 11-on-11. I can see some of it from where I stand, but you know, I don't know if Jordan Morgan got any reps with the ones at left tackle today or not. I guess he would have gotten a few after Rashid got in trouble and after they got done running, but it has not been a battle. You're right about that. But now that Elton Jenkins is back, and look, Elton Jenkins ran with the first team right away at center, like in pads. Like there was no like ramp up for him. He went right to work today. So, you know, he did individual drills yesterday, and today he was like everybody else practicing. So maybe now that he's there and now that Sean Ryan is playing right guard like he's supposed to, maybe they will start the competition. But to this point, you're right. There has not really truly been one.
Yeah, that was my next question was, what do we see from Jenkins? I saw he showed up. You touched on that, so that's okay. I have this question. It's prompted because obviously this weekend Sterling Sharp, he's going to get into the Hall of Fame. Good for him. That's deserved. And you've talked before about some of these Packer wide receivers currently who are playing for a contract. Let's go even closer. Let's back that. Who's playing to make the roster? Because they got too many guys. Who's out there? Who's playing for a roster spot, let alone a contract?
Yeah, they definitely have too many guys. You know, and that's why Bo Melton's a corner, right? Because that's one less guy that needs a wide receiver spot. I really do believe, by the way, and maybe it's wishful thinking because I like him so much, because he's my kind of guy, Bo is. But I think watching him on special teams, I don't know if he's ever going to actually be a corner, but I think what they looked at is, and said was, we don't have enough guys that deserve a roster spot at corner, so let's put Bo at corner. He doesn't take up a wide receiver spot on the actual sheet of paper, and that way we need him on our team for special teams. There's no way, I would think, I guess I should never say never, that Versace is going to have him not be on his team. They don't have enough flyers or gunners or whatever. They need him. So that's one less spot. You know, I am, after talking to Christian Watson, despite other people's opinions, Christian Watson and I both have the same opinion, and that is that he's going to start the season on PUP. So that's four games before he's eligible to play. Romeo Doubs, I suppose, theoretically could get traded, or Wicks could get traded. But it's going to be Doubs, Wicks, Reed, for sure, and then Golden, that's four. Now, Savion Williams is a third-round pick, so he's making it regardless. But, he dropped back out of practice today, and he had a concussion earlier in a non-contact practice, which you don't see very often. So I don't know what it's going to look like for him. And then you've got the next men up that are competing are Malik. Not Malik Willis, the other Malik, Malik Heath, and Mecole Hardman. And, you know, Hardman has really impressed me. I will admit, I was too dismissive of his chances. I like what I've seen from him. So that's kind of where things stand right now. But if they keep seven and Bo is considered a corner, and Watson isn't on the opening day roster, I just gave you your seven.
I would like to see what's Bo Melton? 16. That's a good. That's a good corner number, right? He can play corner at 16, right?
Yeah, he used to be. He was 80, and he's like, I can't be out there. They're gonna just think they could toast to me all the time. So, but yeah. 16's not 16. He's sharing the number with Sean Clifford.
I've been to a couple of Mizzou practices here. You know, they got double numbers for everybody for offense and defense. That works out fine for me. You know, I'm good with that.
Weird.
I need to finish this only because we've run out of time. And I do need to ask Jason our Discount Liquor Twitter poll question. This has nothing to do with anybody on the show. You got that, Jason? Just ask the question, which is more impressive, high jumping 7'2.5", or having lunch alone with Maria Sharapova in 2010? And your vote, sir.
John Anderson did both of those things?
I believe I stated before I asked the question, can we get the tape, Pebble? I said this has nothing to do with any of the members of this show. But yes, you'll have to address that, or you might actually have to listen to the show earlier. He went in great detail.
I don't have time.
All right. Well, you can call him and text it.
Sharapova, and it's not close.
All right. Thanks, thanks, Jason. Voters agree with you. 60% say Sharapova. 40% say 7.5. And I just want to let you know, that means, Jason, I have to spend more time focusing on how amazing 7.5 is, because clearly I have failed to this point. Just giving you a heads up. Thanks, Jason.
All right. You can just call him Sharapova instead. That would also work. All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
Ooh, that would too. That would too. Sharapova, what do you think about the Brewers? Next. It is so easy to talk about Fisco Autobody because they're so good. Nobody's ever listened to me and then said, Homer, they weren't as good as you said. They usually said they're even better than you say, which to me seems a little hard, but I'll accept it. Fisco Autobody on Forest Home in Franklin. On Forest Home in Franklin, don't give the address enough. Family business, owned since 1931. It's not what they do, it's who they are. That's important because they're still in the family. So imagine how young they were when they started doing this. That's one of the reasons they're so good. They're still doing it. Expert workmanship, guaranteed for the life of your vehicle. Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin, you'll thank them. And eventually you'll come around to thanking me. And I like that. Fisco, Fisco, Fisco. The John Anderson Homer Hour. The questions coming in on YouTube about Marshawn Lloyd, the injury. Marshawn Lloyd is just always hurt. We'll never know his potential greatness. I have been accused by you of coming to opinions a little too early, so I don't know if you would say this is the same, but Sean is a very important member of the Institute, so I'm willing to let you respond to that thought.
Well, we've got September 7th, so we have five and a half weeks before we need to see him play, so we'll see what comes of it. But
are you concerned about that possibility?
If he was not the way people view running backs in 2025, like there's no more disposable position, right? And so if you end up, we spent a third round guy, he got hurt a lot, didn't work out. It's bad for the kid. Feel bad for him, but
find another
move on to the next one.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, they're like cats at the shelter. They'll make more.
Do you feel like it was always that way, or did you think it and no one else did, or what's been the evolution of that belief about running backs for you? I mean, you couldn't have said it when Walter Payton was playing.
No, I didn't think that at all. No, I used to think it was like when, I used to think that John Brockington was the end-all man.
He was good.
When you had a guy, he had a belt, and he played fullback.
And then he became good when they brought in the guy who, MacArthur Lane. That was actually the first two.
Yeah, traded with the Cardinals for him, with Donnie Anderson. Traded him to St. Louis at the time. But no, that's just the way the game's evolved, right? They throw it now. The passing game's more pronounced. It is more better protected. And the running back guys, everybody decides. I think it's funny. It still helps to have one of those guys if you can have somebody. I think we saw that with Saquon Barkley. I think the Raiders saw that with the Josh Jacobs. He had this great season. And then, what's his name, came in off the Belichick tree that never makes it through a season and a half, and they fire him. Josh McDaniel. And he's like, we're going to have the two backs because that's what you should have. And he realized that, no, he needed the other guy and pump it to him the whole time. But so I think if you can have a Derrick Henry, if you can have somebody that really helps. But the position in the game has changed to the point now that you're like, just give me a couple of them and we'll toss them back there and we'll see what happens.
And of note, even Saquon Barkley and what he did hasn't changed that. It's changed it a little. Maybe with the premise that is the defenses are adjusting so much to the pass that the run has now become an alternative. But I'm not hearing anybody say, change everything about your views about running backs, because he certainly was the most influential running back in a long time in terms of winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah, even though you decided he was not any part of the game in the Super Bowl, if you recall, that you were so down on him that he only had 54 yards or whatever it was on 20. Even though he touched the ball on half of their offensive plays, you didn't think he'd contributed much.
My belief and emphasis on running backs is that their yardage now is catching and running. That's what matters. Not, I don't even care what they're running is. I care about the total yardage. So,
But there was a time when you did that, right? Emmitt Smith, big
yes.
Hit. Eric Dickerson, there was a reason he was picked high. Even, you know,
Adrian Peterson. Yeah, probably the last one.
Curious to see what Gentry does in Vegas now, but that's why I just feel like the position's changed, and I don't know that the Packers, you know, Jacobs is there, so that's good, but I don't think if he got hurt, they'd figure a way to piecemeal it together. So,
well, part of that to me is I don't think that LaFleur is the guy who believes that strongly in running. I mean, if he did, they might move in that direction, and maybe he'll prove me wrong. But it seems to me he's
which is odd too, right? Because as Jason said, right, they're trying to be more physical and more nasty. Well, usually the best way to do that is, you know, how many offensive linemen work for this network?
Let me give you a heads up.
Let just go road grade people, and that makes them all happy. Makes them so happy.
LaFleur might win 5 Super Bowls. He will never be mean and nasty. Never. Never. Ever, 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 ever. And the time that I use as the example is when Ben Brust took a jersey, an Aaron Rodgers jersey, right, of the Jets. Was that what it was? And asked him to sign it. Pebble, did he sign it?
He did not.
But they had a discussion about it for a while. And I said, come on. Can you imagine the head coach of the Detroit Lions? Go away. And don't.
Yeah.
Either way, if it doesn't mean he, like I said, he can't, but you're just not going to sell on me that he's ever going to be like the coach of the Eagles. And he might be better than him in time, but that's not who he is, and you can't sell. I'm not buying it. How about you? Will you ever believe the Packers, with him as head coach, will be known more than anything else as a tough team?
Yeah, I don't know that they're ever going to get that moniker. But that doesn't mean they can't be, right? Like, because people would tell you all the time, if you go back, that Bill Walsh's teams were finesse teams, and they weren't. They were mean as snakes.
Correct.
They were nasty.
Yes, so, and he could be mean and nasty, too.
He could, and he was like, listen, when your time came done, he may have liked you, but your time was over. He moved on from you. Off you go.
Yes, as Joe Montana.
Yeah, so but he was always, you know, he was seen as this intellectual and the West Coast offense. And so just because LaFleur has that reputation, that's kind of how he is. And look, right. And I think it's earned. I don't think he's misdiagnosed here. But I do think that you can still be, despite that, you can still be an ornery kind of outfit.
So and I don't know that, to be fair to him, he doesn't have the same ability regarding personnel as Walsh did. I mean, you could say the same thing to some degree about Goody if you wanted to, that if LaFleur, but then I think we would have seen arguments and stuff. But anyway, all right, Lon, let's get to the Brewers because I thought last night's game was just huge, and it's hard for any game to be huge, but you're down 3-0 in the first inning, and it was a weird 3-0. They just come back. That game was symbolic of this team, which doesn't have the kind of players like the Cubs do or maybe the Dodgers, where you think they can always come back because they're that good. This team always can come back, and they got nobodies.
I mean, they touch up Miz for 3, and he was what? He was a batter or 2 from being out.
Right.
Right? They had guys in the pen. It was he was on the ropes. And they, you know, but he survived that, which is good because I would have hated to see him not make it out of that. It was nice of them to.
And if anybody didn't watch the game, you should watch it because it was a fluke of what they scored. It wasn't like they were hitting him and then the crazy stuff ended and he just started getting people out. But to come back, I mean, the Cubs had a very good pitcher. They outscored them 8-1 after being down 3-0.
Yeah, their pitcher hadn't allowed a run in what, 25, 26 innings? But it is, to your point about you look at teams that come back, because my son and I went to dinner, and I guess it was the 6th inning or so we went. And so, but I'm watching the crawl on the bottom line there at ESPN. And I'm like, oh, it's 6-3 in the seventh. Okay, we got to be all right. And then I realized it was the top, and the Cubs make it 6-4. And I'm like, oh, boy. You know, and they managed to, but to your point, right? Like, you're like, okay, they can come up with three in a hurry if you get a little loose with it. And that they knocked them down. That was big. And, you know, to win at your place, because the Cubs always come up here and they like to think that Milwaukee is their second home and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I thought it was a gigantic win. And I think if they can come through tonight and get one more, you know, and I'm not generally huge on like winning the series. Like, I don't know that that's a huge stat until you win like nine of them. But I think against the Cubs, it would be nice to come out of there with at least two of those suckers and the division lead.
And I want to see the Cubs have the same feeling I saw that the Dodgers look like. And then the manager are like, what? You guys aren't this good.
Right. How did we just get, I got this big welt on my arm. Nobody punched me, but I got stung 17 times.
Yes, by ants. It's not, you're not that. You're not who you think you are, and yet you just did it to us multiple games, and now they did it again last night to the Cubs. Fourth quarter.
You get enough bee stings, you can take down a bear.
Yeah. Oh, that'll be on the list. Not as good as Sharapova, but it's close. Next. It is the John Anderson Homer Hour, 7-2.5, by the way. In fact, LaFleur did sign the Jets Rogers jersey. Okay. So I want to make sure you had the facts right, and it defends my position as a good, smart manager and head coach, but tough, no. Now we
so
get
should
to...
So he punched him in the face? Is that what you're saying? Punched him in the arm or what?
What he should have done? No, I'm not. Well, no, I'm not signing Aaron Rodgers' Jets jersey. What? What? You know, would Bill Belichick have signed a Tom Brady Buccaneers jersey? What do you think? What do you think, 7-2.5? I'm doubtful about that.
Yeah, I think you've made your point.
All right. Now, I want to get to you, Av. This show was good, Sharapova, but this will be it. And please state it maybe three or four times. The perfect analysis, as you just stated, of the 2025 Milwaukee Brewers. A perfect analysis. What you just said about the enough bees.
You get enough bee stings, you can bring down a bear?
Yes, one more time. In proper John Anderson, this will be legendary if they win the World Series as the perfect explanation. Murphy will use this. We send this to Murphy. He will use this. The Milwaukee Brewers, remember this in thinking about this year's team. Take it away, John Anderson.
Well, I tell you what, though, that's not, I feel bad because that's not my saying. Chichi Rodriguez said that to me one time. I don't know if you know that. I wrote a book with Chichi Rodriguez. And so we were going around the course, we were visiting, and obviously he's Dominican. He's Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rican.
And he was talking about, he was talking about great players when we were talking about Roberto Clemente. And he was talking about Juan Gonzalez, who was good at the time, who had been, I think at that time he was back in Cleveland, he was out with the Rangers. Anyways, he was talking about those boppers. And then he said, but, you know, a lot of times we've got middle infielders and guys that don't hit, but they field. And he was making one. But listen, you get enough bees, you get enough bee stings, they can take down a bear. And so Chichi Rodriguez is the guy who said that to me.
Say it again.
Well, so we're just are we recording this for posterity's sake?
I just want to make sure I have enough of them to choose from, because I believe, and you've given Chichi Rodriguez, or as I called him, Shy Shy Radjaway. I wasn't really good. Understanding. Okay, we give it to Chichi, but remember this, steal this, use this. This is the greatness of the 2025 Milwaukee Brewers. Take it away, 7-2.5.
If you get enough bee stings, you can bring down a bear, and they're ready to go. That's them. They are buzzing right now.
Isn't that what they did to the Dodgers? Isn't that what they did to the Cubs? And isn't that how the Cubs and the Dodgers must view them?
Yeah, they just but also that belies the fact that you have a bunch of really good players. You see that, like, they were questionable. Those pitchers are good. Felix good. They've got guys that can play. You know, it's just maybe in name-wise, they seem more they seem tinier and in stature salary wise, but they've got a bunch of really good players, so we don't want to discount them too much with some, you know, chintzy little bumper sticker saying.
Just remember, I'm predicting it. This will live with the greatness. And they win the World Series, they will bring in John Anderson to say it. Tell the world what you said first about this Milwaukee Brewer team one more time.
We've said it enough. We got it. People have the idea.
He does this. This is the salt of John Anderson. Every now and then informing me, you ain't running this show, buddy. I run the show. You can go only so far. On the tee next.